chapter 18, verse 15 through 23. We'll read that. And then we're going to read verses 28 through 30. But notice what it says in 15 through 23. It says, "Wherefore, when Saul saw that he behaved himself very wisely," that's speaking of David, "he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he went out and came in before them. And Saul said to David, 'Behold, my elder daughter Merab, her will I give thee to wife. Only be thou valiant for me and fight the Lord's battles.' For Saul said, 'Let not mine hand be upon him, but let the hand of the Philistines be upon him.'" Boy, ain't that nice. "And David said unto Saul, 'Who am I, and what is my life for my father's family in Israel, that I should be son-in-law to the king?' But it came to pass at the time when Merab, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David, that she was given unto Adriel the Meholathite to wife. And Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David, and they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. And then Saul said, 'I will give him her, that she may be a snare to him.'" Man, this is a marriage made in heaven, isn't it? "And that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Wherefore Saul said to David, 'Thou shalt this day be my son-in-law in the one of the twain.' And Saul commanded his servant, saying, 'Commune with David secretly, and say, Behold, the king hath delight in thee, and all his servants love thee. Now therefore be the king's son-in-law.' And Saul's servant spake those words in the ears of David. And David said, 'Seeth it to you a light thing to be a king's son-in-law, seeing that I am a poor man and lightly esteemed?'" Then notice what it says in verse 28 through 30. "And Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. And Saul was yet the more afraid of David, and Saul became David's enemy continually. Then the princes of the Philistines went forth, and it came to pass after they went forth that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name was much set by." Now, here you see Saul having an intense hatred for David. So much so that he wished evil upon him. Now you say, "Oh man, that's horrible." How many would agree with that? Oh, that is a horrible thing, is it not? But ask yourself the question. Have you ever thought evil to come upon somebody else because you thought they did you wrong? You know, that same desire lies in all of our hearts, does it not? And I don't know who it was that you had that desire that evil come upon them, but I'm going to tell you something. That's not a Christian thing. That's not something that we should seek. Now, human drama unfolds for us in this chapter of Samuel, 1 Samuel, and it reveals to us much more than what is happening in this one story. Often we behold the behavior of others, and the Lord speaks to us about their sinful ways. You know, we ought to learn a lot from the behavior of others. You know, we ought to look at people and see what caused them to become like they are. And perhaps we should maybe go down that same road. You know, when I was a little fellow, you know what? I remember my uncle taking us to the south side of Chicago. And I mean, we were driving down there. We saw the homeless bums laying in the gutters and everything. And he kind of thought it was funny. But you know what? That should have sent a message loud and clear to us. Look at what the damage that liquid devil does to the lives of people. You know, we can learn from the mistakes of others. We can also learn the good things that others do, and we can mimic that as well. But we ought to learn from the lives of others. The Bible declares that David behaved himself wisely. Now, Saul, here in this chapter, didn't behave himself wisely. Matter of fact, he did evil. As we take a discerning look at both of their lives, we see not only what is happening on this occasion, but we also discover what kind of behavior leads to its outcome. Now, one man obviously had God's blessing on his life, while the other was rejected by the Lord. Now, our God desires to teach us. And folks, we need to be teachable. You know, so many people, you know what? A preacher can get up there and preach all kinds of truth and everything, and they think they got it. They don't need any more teaching. They have arrived. We need to be open. We need to be teachable. You know, I've taught certain things, and I saw people sitting there going like this. And I'm thinking, how unwise are you? You know, the subject that I'm teaching, I know it works. And you're sitting there like, I can't teach you a thing. Now, that makes no sense to me. You know, we need to be teachable. You know, when we read the Word of God, we need to be teachable. You know, this Bible ought to be reading us, and we ought to conform to what God has said. As we take a close look at the lives of these two men, we can learn some valuable lessons. Looking at the life of Saul, we notice that we don't want that to be part of our life. Looking at the life of David, we ought to notice some things that we do want. In the Christian life, we talk a lot about men and God, and that's rightly so. However, that's not how most people think. You know, the world thinks only they view life here as between men and men, and they leave God totally out of the equation. We are saying loudly and rather clearly what we believe about God the way we treat other people. We tell people what we believe about God by the way we act when other people affect our lives. How do you react? You know, Jesus is to be our example, right? Now, He was God, was He not? And how many here think that He was mistreated? Now, how did He react? How did He take it? Did He react like Saul or more like David? How do we react? So often, you know what, somebody does us wrong, you know, we're looking at them and like, your turn is next. I'm going to get my pound of flesh. I'm going to do unto you as you have done unto me. I'm going to return evil for evil. Now, is that the way we're supposed to react? Not even close. Now, doesn't the Bible say, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord? You know, I've learned this a long time ago, and I'm still working on it, believe me, because there's times I want to lay hands on somebody. You know, and it's not to bless them, you know. But, you know what? I've learned when I keep my hands off of a situation that somebody does me wrong, God sure knows how to take care of them. And He does a better job of it than I could ever do. Folks, we don't need to be like Saul. We need to be like David. We need to be like Jesus when people do us wrong. He is our example, is He not? And when we mishandle a situation when somebody does us wrong, you know what? It's a reflection upon our God. Now, we soon understand, when you read this passage, whose hand is on David? Was it the hand of Saul? Was it the hand of the Philistines? Or was it the hand of God and God's blessing upon him? On occasion, we see people or perhaps meet people that we recognize the hand of God being upon. Now, how many here would say, man, you know what? If God's hand could be upon me, I want His blessings. I do, right? Well, you say, how does that happen? Well, I'll tell you what, it doesn't happen being like Saul. It happens by being like David. You know, now it would be a wonderful thing if we lived like David did at this time and had God's blessings upon us. Wouldn't you think so? So how do we get God's blessings? Well, how about being a doer of the Word? Don't you think David was doing the Word as he reacted properly to Saul? I think so. I think that's why God's hand was upon him. And does not James tell us if we're a doer of the Word, we're going to be blessed in our deeds? So why is it so difficult for us to be doers of the word? Why is it so difficult for us to simply be obedient? It shouldn't be a problem. You know, there's a word trust, right? We ought to trust. We ought to trust the Lord. But we also ought to obey. We sing that song, trust and obey. Yet so many of us don't do what we're told to do according to the Scriptures. So let's look at the foolishness of Saul. Now, notice in verse 8, notice what it says here of this chapter. And Saul was very what? Now, how many think that means he was angry? Very angry. He was upset, wasn't he? And the saying displeased him. Well, what displeased him? We'll read about that. And he said, they have ascribed unto David 10,000, and to me have they only ascribed thousands. What more can he have but the kingdom? Now, you're the king. You're a whiny, pathetic man right here. You know, if you wanted the women to ascribe to you 10,000s, why didn't you go out and meet Goliath head on? You were the king. You stood head and shoulders above everybody else. That was your job. Instead, you sat in your tent like Chicken Little. And some guy's not even old enough to be in the army comes forward and goes out and takes that giant out. Now, if you relied on God like David did, and you trust in Him like David did, you could have been the hero. You could have been the song of the women. But instead, you chose not to. Pretty simple, isn't it? Now, he's complaining because they're singing about David killing his 10,000s and Saul killing his thousands. And Saul just didn't want to dance to that tune. Every time he heard the women singing, he became angry. And he declares, I will do anything I can to put an end to David's life. I don't want to hear that song no more. I don't want to see that guy anymore. Even though he was the great deliverer of the nation. He tried to kill David himself. Remember, he chunked the spear at him twice and David moved out of the way? I wonder how that happened. Could it possibly be God's hand was on David? Saul was a skilled warrior. He should have been able to nail him to the wall, but he didn't. God delivered David from Saul. Now, Saul had promised to give David one of his daughters. Man, that happened before the fight with Goliath. Remember, David said, hey, what's going to happen to the guy that takes this giant out? And they said, oh, you know what? You get one of the king's daughters. Now, I don't know if that was a good thing or not. But their family would be, what, tax-free? And so there were some benefits for the guy that went out there and took out Goliath. Now, he promised him one of his daughters. So why wasn't he married already? Doesn't sound to me like Saul's very honest. He's not a man that keeps his word. You know, Saul is lacking integrity. You know, one of the things about God's people ought to be known for is their honesty. Honesty isn't the best policy. It's the only policy for a Christian. We ought to have integrity. When we say something, people ought to believe us. Unless it's your grandchildren. Them rascals, they get me every time. But I'm telling you, when we make a commitment, our word ought to be solid. Saul here promised David one of his daughters, and he doesn't keep it. And then now he says, you know what? I'm going to give him another daughter. Well, it could have been the same one, but he should have already been wed by this time, don't you think? And so he plans on giving Merib, and then he gives her to another man. Well, that's crazy, isn't it? So now Saul's arranging a wedding in such a fashion that the whole thing will be a snare to David. What a good guy, huh? Now, if you read the story of this episode in David's life, you'll discover this daughter that Saul gave to David to wed actually wasn't a snare to him. She actually spared his life from her father. God took care of David. Saul says, you know what, I'm not going to require a dowry. Well, David didn't have anything to give anyways. He was a poor man. And so he says, you know, I'll tell you what I want. If you marry my daughter, now I would have said, listen, you already promised me one of your daughters. I shouldn't have to do anything anymore. Why are you putting on something else on me when I was promised a daughter to begin with? I'd rather be single than marry one of your daughters. But anyways, so he says, I want you to kill some of my enemies. I want you to kill 100 of those uncircumcised Philistines for me. Now, he was hoping, of course, that one of those guys would kill David. His hand no longer wanted to be against David. He wanted somebody else to do his dirty job. Well, to make a long story short, David went out with his men. He didn't kill 100 of the enemy. He killed 200. He went the extra mile. He brought Saul the evidence of 200 slain Philistines. And when he came back unharmed before Saul, the Bible says in verse 28, and Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. Saul thought, man, you know, I tried to kill him myself. I couldn't do it. You know, I send him against the Philistines, and I'm hoping that they kill him and take him out, but you know what? He comes back safe and sound. After all his fruitless attempts to take the life of David, we read this at the end of this book. Then said Saul, I have sinned. Return my son David, for I will no more do thee harm, because my soul was precious in thine eyes this day. Behold, I have played the fool and have erred exceedingly. You find that in 1 Samuel chapter 26, verse 21. Now, Saul is now admitting, I'm a fool. No kidding, Saul. Now, if you turn to the closing book, or the closing chapter of this book, who eventually took Saul out? Wasn't it the Philistines? So, sounds to me like Saul reaped what he sowed. He wanted David to kill by the Philistines, but God spared him, and now the Philistines end up killing Saul, as well as the rest of his sons. Now, here's a lesson we need to learn. It is foolish, one of the most foolish things for anyone to do, trying to play God and execute judgment upon somebody else. That's not our responsibility. Vengeance is not yours. It is the Lord's. Let Him do His job. When you and I get something in our heart towards somebody else that should not be there, we start living the life of a hypocrite, just like Saul did. And Saul happened to be jealous of David. Jealousy. That's a terrible green-eyed monster, isn't it? It should not be once named amongst the people of God. That jealousy has ruined many a relationship, especially a marriage. If one of the partners in marriage is jealous, you know what? It ruins that relationship. It doesn't build it up. It's a horrible thing, isn't it? Because you know what? A relationship is built on trust. And if you're jealous of somebody, you're saying, you know what? I don't trust you. I have no respect for you. Now, the problem isn't with the other person. The problem is with the one possessing jealousy. Jealousy will destroy the person where it's harbored. That vessel will be destroyed. All because you have lack of trust and a lack of love for the person that you committed yourself to. Terrible thing. Terrible thing. Nobody else wants to live under those conditions. I'll be honest with you. Just say it right there. Nobody wants that. You know, sometimes a man gets angry with his wife. Don't they? Oh, I got one guy who says, yeah, I have. The rest of you. That's because you're fearful of your wife. Yeah, I know. I can say the same thing. But you know what? You get angry at your wife at times, don't you? Right? Do they think like you? No. Do they act like you? Do they talk like you? You know, sometimes I just look at Connie and I'm like, what in the world is that? What are you talking about? I have no idea. She says things so cattywampus. And then she says, well, you're a man, you wouldn't understand. I'm like, good, I don't know why you're informing me. But she does things I wouldn't do. It's, you know, it's different. Men and women are different. And thank God that they are. It makes life interesting. But you know what? Some men get mad at their wives. And it's not a good thing. Sometimes wives get mad at their husbands. Don't they? It happens. So what do you do? This is how you should do. When you approach them, you know what? You put them down. That always is helpful, isn't it? And then they respond by putting you down, and then you decide you're going to put them down even more, and it just goes back and forth, and you keep pushing each other's red buttons until you have a big blow up, and it's just wonderful. You know, maybe somebody ought to act like a Christian. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Well, that's what you should do. You know, sometimes you get angry with somebody at the job, don't you? You know, I was reading a story about this guy. He got angry at the job. And all of a sudden he let out this outburst of all kinds of profanity. And he was a believer. And when he got done, he looked over at his coworker and said, man, I didn't know how that came out of me. And his coworker looked at him and said, I do. He says, really? He said, yeah, because it was in you. Out of the abundance of the heart, what? The mouth speaketh. You know, you can get mad at somebody at work and try to get even with them. Maybe you get angry with somebody in the church. Now, that's never happened, has it? Surely not. Not me, anyways. Not Pastor Merciful. Some people get mad at me. They don't like what I preach. Now, that's not on me. That's on them. If you don't agree with God's word, get mad at Him. Don't get mad at the messenger. That makes no sense to me. But we get mad at folks, and sometimes we wish them harm, don't we? We wish them ill. You know, it's foolish to take that matter into our own hands. Now, whose hand was on David? God, right? God makes sure that his children have his hand upon them when they do what he says he wants them to do, and he protects them. King Saul was foolish. And he admits it. I have played the fool. Then notice the faith of David. Talking about God is not the only way a man can express their faith. You can tell someone if they are a genuine Christian if they love God by the way they live. A man doesn't have to stand up and say, "Hey, I have faith in God." No, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But you know what? He should demonstrate that faith in God by the way he lives. You know, if you're not living right, people are going to think you just run in your mouth. And here's the thing. Lost people do know how Christians ought to live. If you ever wonder how you should live, just ask them. They will tell you. And they'll tell you accurately. Now, they ain't going to live that way, but they expect that of you. And you should. They should, by the way. We are to be the light. We are to be the salt. And our faith needs to be demonstrated by the way we live, not how we run our mouth. Your walk talks, your talk talks, but your walk talks louder than your talk talks. Man, I learned that in Bible college. I still got it. I don't remember much else, but that was one thing I remembered. Now, ask yourself, do you think David sought the kingdom? No, he never. I mean, he was happy tending sheep, wasn't he? Strumming his harp. And then Samuel came along and anointed him with oil. He never had grandiose ideas, did he? But God had his hand on him. Now, did David ever lift a finger to become king? Now, there was times when you read about the life of David where he could took Saul out. There was a time when Saul came in the cave where David and his men were. And David was encouraged by some of his men, those sons of Zariah, Joab and his brothers. Boy, they were treacherous guys, weren't they? You always want those kind of guys for your bodyguard, though. But anyways, they were encouraging him to take Saul out. He didn't. Then another time, there was a camp, and God put a deep sleep on all the army that was chasing David. And David and Abiathar, they went down into the camp, and they took Saul's bolster and his canteen or whatever, and they got out of that camp, but God put a deep sleep on him. Abiathar says, "David, you don't have to put your hand on him. I know you don't want to kill him. That's the Lord's anointed. You don't want to touch him. But I don't mind doing it. I'd take a spear, just one thrust. That's all I ask." And what did David say? No. No. You just leave him be. God will take care of him. But you know what? He didn't try to get the kingdom early, did he? He let God do a work in his life and in the life of others. And when he did go finally sit upon the throne of Israel, he was a prepared man to rule and reign over that nation. You see, did he seek to be the son-in-law of the king? No. Now, a person's faith in God, or lack of it, is demonstrated every day by the life they live. Do you know that the way you do your day's work on the job demonstrates your lack of faith or faith in God? You know, one of the things when I was working is I always tried to be one of the hardest workers, if not the hardest worker, on the job. I did not want to be a slackard. You say, why is that? Because it would reflect poorly on my Lord. Do you know that how you and I respond to authority demonstrates our faith in God or lack of faith in God? How we treat our families and how our families are ordered demonstrate our faith or lack of faith in God. How we respond to our children demonstrates our faith or lack of faith in God. Now, turn, if you would, to Psalm 55. Now, David's writing about his enemies. And perhaps he has King Saul in mind here. Notice what it says in verses 16 through 21. Notice what David says. "As for me, I will call upon God, and the Lord shall" what? "Save me." Now, did he say, "I'm going to call upon God to pour his wrath upon my enemies"? It's not what he said. Not in this psalm, anyways. "Evening and morning at noon will I pray and cry aloud. And he shall what? Hear my voice. So David didn't think prayer was an exercise in futility. He believed there was a God in heaven who would hear and answer his request. He hath delivered my soul in peace from the battle that was against me. For there were many with me. God shall hear and afflict them, even he that abideth of old Selah. Because they have no changes, therefore they fear not God. He hath put forth his hands against such as be at peace with him. He hath broken his covenant. The words of his mouth were smoother than butter, but war was in his heart. His words were softer than oil, yet they were drawn swords. Now that's a pretty good description of Saul, is it not? Now David said that his words were smooth like butter and oil, but in reality they were as swords and drawn swords. Now in verse 22 and 23, he tells us in that chapter, he says, cast thy burden upon the Lord, and he shall what? Do you see that? He didn't say, take matters into your own hand and sustain thyself. Who's are we supposed to put the burdens in their hands? Of the Lord. Cast thy burdens upon the Lord, right? He'll take care of you. He shall never suffer the righteous to be moved. But thou, O God, shall bring them down into the pit of destruction. Bloody and deceitful men shall not live out half their days, but I will trust in thee. Well, that's good stuff, isn't it? Now, David had faith in God. And we see the foolishness of Saul and the faith of David. The question now is asked, how are we going to live? You know, God didn't write this stuff just to fill our head with knowledge. You know, these are admonitions, and he's challenging us. How are we going to live? Are we going to live in the manner that Saul did, trying to get vengeance on somebody we think that shouldn't get the accolades? Are we going to live like David? And we're going to leave the matter to the Lord to take care of. You know, there are people, even in good Bible-believing, Bible-preaching churches, who live just like Saul. They're always trying to get even with people, wishing them harm. May God help all of us to live by faith as David did. All right, we'll stop right there. We'll have some more.